What's up, guys? Welcome to the On the Bump podcast with me, Ross Stripling. This is a podcast where two current major league pitchers take a deep dive into an all-time great pitcher of the past. We got Clayton Kershaw on the podcast today, who needs no introduction. We're going to be talking about a perfect pitching comp to himself. And our subject today, that's Sandy Koufax, one of the greatest left-handed pitchers that's ever done it. I'll get Clayton in here in a minute to join me for an in-depth conversation about Sandy and what allowed him to have a career that finished with him in the Hall of Fame. But first, I want to give you guys a little quick background. So Sandy grew up in New York in the 1940s and 50s, and he was a basketball player. Basketball was his biggest passion, and that makes sense. I mean, he's got the biggest hands and the most giant wingspan I've ever seen. I mean, his arms literally hang down to his knees, I promise. So he went to play basketball at the University of Cincinnati and actually averaged 10 points a game as a freshman, which is pretty cool. But the funny thing is the basketball coach was also the baseball coach, and you just can't hide a left arm like that. So I think he realized, I think you're in the wrong sport here, bud. Let's get you over on the mound on the baseball field and see what you got. And by all accounts, it sounds like Sandy had no idea where the ball was going in college, but that arm spoke for itself, and it created a bidding war from MLB teams. And eventually, Sandy was signed by the Dodgers for $14,000, which was a sum high enough that actually meant he never had to go to the minor leagues. So he goes straight to the big leagues, which may have stunted his development a little bit. We'll get into that later. And debuts with the Dodgers in 1955. And pitches pretty sparingly in those first five seasons as a major leaguer. He did show flashes of brilliance that was to come. But he walked over five batters per nine innings. That's a huge number. Think about basically allowing five free runners every game. That's hard to pitch around. And the funny thing is the Dodgers actually won the World Series in 1955 and 1959 early in Sandy's career. But Koufax was not a major part of either one of those World Series teams. From 60 to 62, he starts to get it rolling a little bit, cuts down the walks, which leads to a lower ERA and some better results. But from 63 to 66 is when Sandy Koufax really starts to show off the quote-unquote arm of God. Four of the most dominant seasons in the history of starting pitching that we've ever seen. And I'm going to run through some of the stats here in a minute. But literally four seasons that basically vaulted him right into the Hall of Fame. They're so dominant. And it's basically something that we've never seen from a starting pitcher since then and we'll never see again. And this is where I want you guys to really pay attention and understand how good Sandy Koufax was over those four seasons. Leads the league in ERA all 4 years. Sub-2 ERA in three of them. 25-plus wins in three of them. And over 300 innings in three of them, which simply does not happen anymore. You don't see 25-plus wins and you don't see 300 innings. He led the league in strikeouts three of the 4 years, and he won the pitching triple crown in 63, 65, and 66. That is where you lead the league in wins, ERA, and strikeouts. Pitching triple crown, never see it. He did it three out of 4 years. He had a no-hitter in every year, every season, no-hitter, and in perfect game in 1965. Tell you what, if you need a little baseball nostalgia, type in 1965 Sandy Koufax perfect game into YouTube and you won't regret it. It's called by Vin Scully. It's just Vin talking baseball for 3 hours, calling a perfect game by Sandy Koufax. Doesn't get more baseball than that. Doesn't get more Los Angeles Dodgers than that. And I tell you what, you won't regret it. So over those 4 years, he won three Cy Youngs and also the MVP in 1963. And that right there is the perfect segue into my next guest, who is also a three-time Cy Young winner and an MVP. He's also one of the greatest left-handed pitchers, left-handed Dodgers that have ever played the game of baseball, Clayton Kershaw. Clayton, what's up, man?
Hi, Strippies.
Good to have you, man. We had Buehler on, now we got Clayton on, just running through the entire Dodger pitching staff here. All right, so in researching this, kind of like how JFK and Abraham Lincoln assassinations had so many things in common. Have you ever seen that before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, if you ever get a chance,
check it out.
Wild conspiracy theories. Yeah, like just everything is the exact same. Anyways.
Hold on, not anyways. How are they? That's 100 years apart.
Yeah, it's like one guy got killed in a warehouse and he ran to a barn, and the other guy got killed or ran to a theater, the other guy got killed in the theater and he ran to a warehouse, like the timing, like all this. It's just a bunch of weird connections. That's a podcast for another day.
All right, fair.
But in similar light, the careers of Sandy Koufax and Clayton Kershaw through their first 12 seasons are nearly identical. And I was talking to you earlier, you didn't know that. And I'm surprised.
No, I didn't know that.
all 12 years are all with the Dodgers that you didn't know this. No one's ever brought this to you, brought this up to you. So first off, before we get into that, I just want to ask, like, so you guys are both lefties. Obviously, we're comping you guys. You, as we'll touch on here in a second, you guys have essentially the same exact numbers through the first 12 seasons. But Sandy, we're very lucky that Sandy is still alive and he still comes around. We see him in spring training. We see him in LA every now and then, see him in the playoffs. Over your first 12 years, like, what have your interactions with Sandy been like?
Yeah, he's the man. I mean, I think, you know, when you introduce yourself or you meet Sandy Koufax for the first time, and, you know, I've met a lot of guys throughout my career, guys that have had unbelievable careers of their own. And, you know, not a lot, but there's quite a few that love telling you how good they were. You know, they love talking about their careers and they're passionate about it. And, you know, rightfully so. And it's not that I don't want to listen to that or hear it, but I'm like, man, like, you know, this is our time to play. And Sandy is not like that at all. And I just think that's so cool how he just, like, he wants to ask how you're doing. He wants to just be there to help you if there's anything that he can do, you know, showing how he grips his pitches or just wants to talk. And he just wants to be a friend. And I mean, I think that's just the humility that Sandy has and the guy that he is, just probably the nicest man. I mean, you know, it's just like, he's just like the nicest guy ever. So it's pretty special that we've gotten to be Dodgers for as long as we have and get to be around him for that long.
He's got to be the best looking 85-year-old man that walks the planet.
Yeah, he used to like run marathons. He's in such great shape. I mean, there's no way I'm going to look like that when I'm 80, whatever he is.
I mean, it looks like he's in his 60s.
I know.
And what I like about Sandy, and you touched on a little bit, is you never hear, some guys from that era will say, like, you know, back in my day, we made $1,200, had to work in the off season, like a little bit of bitterness maybe. Like, Sandy's just smiles, happy to be there, easy to talk to. I mean, like you said, man, just an all-around awesome guy. So let's jump into how similar the careers are. So keep in mind, Sandy pitched for 12 seasons, and Clayton just finished his 12th season. So, I mean, it's just a perfect time to compare the two. Sandy, 165 wins. Kirsch, 169. ERA of 2.7 for Sandy. ERA of 2.4 for Kirsch. That's the biggest difference, I'm telling you. After that, basically 2,300 innings for both, 2,400 strikeouts for both, 1,700 hits allowed for both. Both have a one whip. Slightly above a one whip. Both have the exact same hits per nine and strikes out per nine. Both won 3 Cy Youngs and 1 MVP. I mean,
that's weird. Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. I mean, Sandy would have had, you know, obviously his arm problems and stuff had his career cut short, you know. I mean, like, if he played during this time, I'm sure there was a procedure, whether it's Tommy John or like a scope or something, where he could have just had that and kept going. But back in the day, you know, he couldn't do that and just hurt too much to keep going. So it would have been crazy to see what the rest of his career looked like, because his peak is just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And we're going to get into all that, no doubt, because you can't skip over it. I guess before we jump into it, I'd like to ask, with how amazing of a pitcher Sandy Koufax was and how people basically, I mean, you'll hear people say he had the arm of God, but one of the best left-handed pitchers that's ever played the game. Like, when someone says, you comp to Sandy Koufax, or you're walking in the, you know, kind of the same ballpark as Sandy Koufax, like all that kind of stuff, being compared to him, lifelong Dodgers as you both have been thus far. I mean, that's got to be pretty cool.
Well, it's a huge honor. Yeah. I mean, I don't really, you know, it's hard to think about that stuff when you're still playing and you have another start coming up and you got to try to get those guys out. But, you know, any time that, you know, you get to be mentioned with Sandy is just such a huge honor. Definitely don't take that for granted. I guess I just don't really think about it a whole lot yet. And then, you know, maybe some way down the road when I'm retired, I'll be able to think about it. But yeah, it's Sandy's a special guy and obviously had a great career. So it is pretty cool.
At 85, are you going to be coming in the Dodgers clubhouse?
I just hope I'm able to walk when
telling
I'm 85.
The young bucks, what's up?
Man, Sandy. Yeah, no. Well, I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, just the fact that Sandy's able to do that and is around and moving so well, and It's really cool to have him around. It's
pretty
special.
Yeah, like, back in my day, we were only making $30 million a year. You kids are making $100 million a year. All right. So where we really need to dive in is the difference between the two of you, because the similarities are insane, but there are some big differences. Biggest one is really just comes down to the era that you guys have pitched in, right? So Sandy threw 137 complete games, 40 shutouts, 3 years where he threw over 300 innings. That, you know, obviously doesn't exist anymore. 5 years where you made 40 or more starts. Now the most you can make is 33, basically. he had less than a 3 strikeout to walk ratio. He had over 800 walks in his career. So to put that into perspective, you have a 4.27 K to walk ratio. You have over 300 less walks than Sandy Koufax, but you only have 25 complete games and 15 shutouts compared to his 137 and 40, and your 15 shutouts are the active career leader. So when you hear that, 300 innings, 40 plus starts, 137 complete games, what goes through your head?
Yeah, can you imagine? Like if we just were like, hey, you got 9 today. I mean, you're just, you got 9.
Yeah.
I don't care how long it takes. You got 9. It's just, it's a different game. And I think it would be fun to be able to pitch 7 or 8 or 9 innings. And it's not, I don't think it's really a disservice to starters. Like, I still think that we potentially could do that. I just think the guys in our bullpen are so good. And so, like, if we're on our 100th pitch and we face this guy 4 times, and there are certain situations where, like, well, we got Joe Kelly, Bruzar Gratterall, Blake Treinen, Kenley. We got guys throwing 100 miles per hour down there. Like, the ball's moving all over the place. So it's just such a different time to pitch. But what Sandy did is phenomenal. What all those guys did. I mean, I think Sandy, he threw like 320 innings a couple years in a row or something. Yeah. It's like, it's just nuts.
I mean, you had many years yourself going 200 plus innings. A lot of years in there where you made 30 plus starts in a row. Can you imagine at your effort level? Like, you're a guy, Clayton, that I've always looked up to because I think your first pitch and your 100th pitch had the same intensity all the time. There's, you know, some starters that start off in kind of coast mode, get a feel for it, and then they get in a groove and they start letting it eat. Like, you let it eat from pitch one, no matter who you're facing. It could be the pitcher in there. It doesn't matter, man. And I don't think that in today's game, especially someone like you with that kind of intensity, like, you couldn't do 40 starts in 300 innings. There's just, it doesn't seem like a body would hold up. Like, you watch these videos of Sandy and Drysdale and guys even before that where it looks like they're throwing at like 60% effort, right? Because they know they got to survive 40 starts in 300 innings.
Right. I don't know. I mean, do you think, like, Trevor Bauer talks about it all the time, right? Like, we should be able to pitch every fourth day and we'll be good to go. And I don't know. I mean, it would be fun to, like, see if you could do that, but maybe 5 years ago. I don't know about right now.
In your 20s. I think that the longevity wouldn't exist. I think that you could maybe do it for 4 or 5 years, right, and then there's just no way you hold up. Like, bodies aren't made to throw 100 miles an hour. It's just, you know, things aren't going to hold up. All right, so the other thing about Sandy that I touched on are the walks. He had over 800 walks in his career, and we'll get into the strike zone later that he was getting pitched to, and he still had 800 walks. How were you? You kind of battled with walks early in your career. You had almost 100 walks in 2009, 80 walks in 2010. Since then, you've averaged about 30. How were you able to eliminate the walk quicker than Sandy was?
Yeah, I knew Sandy had some control issues and was able to figure it out there. And I kind of went through the same thing. And I don't think it was like a mechanical thing. Like, my mechanics were not allowing me to be consistent. I think it was kind of like, man, I'm in the big leagues. These guys are really good. And I need to, like, make perfect pitches to get these guys out. And so I was starting to, like, throw in darts almost, like, trying to aim and, like, hit the perfect spot. And, you know, after my first couple of years, kind of realized that, like, hey, man, my stuff plays here. Like, I can get these guys out. Just go attack them with your best stuff. I mean, try to hit your spot, obviously, but, like, don't try to nibble. Just get after them and start throwing strikes more consistently. And I started doing that better. And then, you know, obviously, I started throwing a slider, too, which definitely helped.
Yeah, the slider. I love that story. It's like, you're in Wrigley Field, and who is it, Honeycutt or Mattingly, come up to you and be like, kid, you're going back to Double A unless you learn a pitch. And you're like, all right, I'll just learn the best lefty slider in the game.
Yeah, I got called into the office. I was struggling so bad. It was my second year. I get called in the office, and Joe Torre's our manager, Donnie's our hitting coach at the time, and basically Joe had Donnie come in and be like, hey, what would be your game plan against Kirsch? And then Donnie was like, well, he doesn't really throw his curveball for a strike. He only has one pitch, so just don't miss the fastball. And I was like, well, that hurts, but yeah, you're right. And so Joe was like, basically figure out how to throw something for a strike. And that day I threw a bullpen, started trying to throw a slider, and that's how it happened.
It's that easy. Anyone young and lit, it's that easy. Just start throwing it. All right, so another big difference before we jump into the next segment is essentially the peak of Sandy happened not, you know, well into his career, 7 years into his career. His first 7 years really were kind of average at best, but then his last 5 were arguably the best 5 innings of starting pitchers ever put together. While you have kind of been basically solid to elite from the get-go, right? So back in the day, if you got drafted and you got a certain signing bonus, amount of signing bonus, you didn't have to go to the minor leagues. You went straight to the big leagues. That was Sandy. He got $14,000 from the Dodgers. He gets to go right to the big leagues at 19 years old, 20 years old, whatever he is. Do you think that Sandy would have, I don't know, developed or, you know, gotten a little better with a stint in the minor leagues? Like, yeah, you didn't spend much time in the minor leagues, but you did get a year. You developed a little bit, year plus, whatever it was. Sandy had to go get big league hitters out from the start. Do you think that maybe if he would have gotten a little bit of time down there, he could have come up and had more success early?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what Sandy told me about that. I mean, I think he nailed it, though. I think he basically had to come up and, you know, just wasn't ready. I don't even know if he, like, played a lot of baseball when he was younger. You know, I think he played other sports. I think he liked basketball a lot, too, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, I think if he got to, like, figure it out a little bit, it probably would have helped him in the future, just like I did. I got to at least have at least a year and a half or two in the minor leagues to try to figure it out a little bit.
All right, let's jump into this next segment. So these are things that I didn't know happened, and we got to touch on them because basically in the middle of his career, right before he took off these 5 years that we're going to talk about, a perfect storm in baseball basically happened for him between both the Dodgers and Major League Baseball, which really allowed Sandy to become the pitcher that he was over those couple years. And like I said, I didn't know that these happened. So keep in mind that Koufax basically became unhittable in 1963. In 1962, the Dodgers moved from the Coliseum, which was apparently a major hitter's park, into Dodger Stadium, which you and I both know is fairly pitcher-friendly. So that right there is a little step in the right direction. But get this, didn't know this. In 1963, the MLB raised the strike zone to the shoulder. From the bottom of the knee to the shoulder was the strike zone. It was like that for, I guess, six seasons. It got so ridiculous in the pitcher's favor that the strike zone was returned to what we know it as now in 1969. So for 6 years, pitchers got to work from the bottom of the knee to the shoulder.
That's big.
that's pretty large.
It's large.
Yeah. Okay. So another random one in there is the Dodgers grounds crew. And I want to ask them about this, if our grounds crew even knows this. But the Dodgers grounds crew realized that MLB didn't actually come in and enforce the height of the mound. So the Dodgers grounds crew built like a gigantic mound for our pitchers. Apparently that was just a foot taller than any other mound.
That's awesome.
And
We should try that.
I've always thought, you know, you throw curveballs, not a ton of curveballs, definitely more fastball sliders, but I throw a bunch of curveballs. I don't like tall mounds because I feel like my curveball breaks 10 feet more and I have no idea where it's going.
I think it. Just look at how big
you'd feel.
Feel
like you're a boss.
We should see if MLB actually does check it. Let's try to do it. Let's raise it an inch in the middle of the night.
Imagine that. I want that job.
You and me.
I come in and I just measure a mound and I fly to the next city. All right.
I bet he does more than that. He's probably doing a little more than
that. We don't know that, though. It's time to jump into Sandy Koufax as the pitcher. The arsenal, the mechanics, everything we can find. There's not a ton of video. You can watch kind of the same four videos over and over on YouTube. But I want to jump into it. First things, usage, which we touched on the Buehler, Pedro Martinez usage, how similar they were. Kershaw, Koufax usage is similar in a way in that Kershaw throws a lot of fastballs and about the same amount of off speed as Sandy. So Sandy was 76% heater, 24% curveball. I guess Kershaw, sorry, I'm mistaken. You don't throw that many heaters. 44% heaters last year.
Yeah, it used to be more back in the day.
Back in the day. 44% heaters, 39% sliders, about 17% curveballs. I'm 36% heaters, so
it's 36?
That's a pretty low number, I'm coming at you with anything, anytime. All right, so you can watch basically the same 10 fastballs over and over, Sandy footage. I mean, what I like, though, and you watch them, and now fast forward, gosh, 50-something years now where we're living at the top of the zone. Probably of the 10 I saw, 8 of them were at the top of the zone for Sandy. And we touched on how the walks were a thing early in his career, and then we expand the strike zone to the top of the shoulder. Sorry, to the shoulder. And now he's just living at the top of the zone, getting people to wave through it all the time. Do you think, or has he even ever mentioned, being around these last couple of years when the top of the zone has become a thing in baseball, did he ever say, like, yeah, I lived at the top of the zone, or do you think that's just...
He always talks about how, like, just his fastball worked off his curveball and vice versa, you know? So obviously his fastball curveball is basically what all of us try to do now is, like, have that fastball come out of the same plane as your curveball. And then his curveball was just unbelievable. And I don't know if you have it in there, but just have you ever seen, like, Sandy's hands wrap his hands around a baseball? And, like, he's like, hey, well, you should like really try this with your curveball. And his middle finger and his thumb are literally like touching on the other side of the baseball. And I'm like, Sandy, I can't do that. Yeah. Like, it's my hands are normal sized. I can't do that. And I just, it just like that big of a hand can make a curveball do some crazy things.
I have that in all caps right here. You his do. Hands.
His hands.
In all caps, because I had the exact same story. He came up to me and he was like, Strip, I feel like sometimes I can see your curveball pop out of your hand. If you could just throw it like this. And I was like, oh, what? Like, I didn't know. He has.
I know.
I mean, he has paws. Yeah. He doesn't have hands. He has paws.
And he would say, like, I get my curveball to break in two directions. And I'm like, what does that mean? And he said, well, sometimes, like, I take my curveball and I try to over-rotate it to make it break away from a right-handed batter. And then when I throw my normal one, I can break it into a right-handed batter. And I was like, Sandy, nobody can do that. So, like, the way that he talks about his curveball and how he, like, manipulated his curveball, like, is just what truly only Sandy could do, I think.
I think he does something that I've always wanted to do, and I can't do it. When I watch some of these footage, he throws the ephus that our man Zach Greinke throws a little bit every now and then.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
He threw one that was his normal, nasty 12-6, and he threw one that looked noticeably slower. To me, it looked like he slowed down on it, all that. I mean, it was huge, but I would have never... I didn't know that he ever mixed that in. And I've always wanted to do it because I love the way Greinke uses it. And I think it's just almost an impossible pitch to hit. Have you ever thought about trying to?
No, same thing. Thought about it, but never done it. You think it wasn't like Sandy's 250th pitch of the night?
Yeah, he's just right. Tired. You're right. Yeah, there's no way to know. Yeah, that was his 347th inning of the year. He's like, I'm done. I want to get into the mechanics a little bit. What I like about when I watch Sandy is, one, he throws from a high arm angle like you and me, which was very unique for the time. That very much kind of slinging it from the slot, from the side back then. But I like it because it looks like he's trying to throw really hard. And we touched on it earlier. That era, those pitchers kind of looked like they were saving it a little bit, right? Because maybe they knew the workload ahead of them. But Sandy, to me, looked like it wasn't just throwing 70%. Like, every pitch had intent and intensity behind it. I don't know. I just like seeing that. So I showed you some footage of Sandy earlier, like what were the kind of the first things that popped out to you?
Does it say how hard Sandy threw?
Yeah, I got a note in here that said, like, according to the video, they calculated it at like 93. Maybe they time it on a stopwatch or something, but it was like 93 point something.
Which I bet was so fast back then.
Oh man, yeah, it's like a lightning bolt.
Yeah, I mean, I think the things that I saw were how long his stride was. I mean, I think he always talks about that, and Rick Honeycutt, our old pitching coach, always talk about that. It's like just how far you can get out there and drive off that back leg. And not that you really do that, Strip. You're kind of a short strike guy.
Not even a little bit.
But, that's how he created his power with his legs. He always talked about that. And then the high arm angle for, his four seamer to get that ride up in the zone and, with his curveball off of that is, like you said, it's kind of like what you see now with a lot of guys, like the upheater and the big 12-6 curveball. He wasn't trying to sink it or cut it. It's just coming right at you, and it was cool to see.
He has a little bit of the old school motion, right, with over the head and the straight leg and, kind of that old school motion that they had back in the day, but it's not quite, like winding it up and all those things that you saw back in the day, but it's definitely, that era. And what's crazy to me, and seems like this year I've heard ankle mobility more than I've ever heard it. Like, gotta have ankle mobility. Good pitchers have ankle mobility. And I'm like, I have terrible ankle mobility. Like, it's always in spring training, they'll be like, Strip, we gotta work on that. I'm like, what? It's just my ankle. But you'll watch these videos of Sandy, and his ankle will be, I don't even know, like digging into the ground, almost like his shin bone is on the mound, on the dirt as he's pushing down the mound. Like, I don't get even close to a position like that. And I feel like you kind of maybe get in a position like that, but not to the extent where he is. Man, I wish I could show you guys a video, but like his hip is so far in front of his head and he's creating so much torque down the mound. I mean, there's like no one that I can even compare him to in modern baseball that gets into a position like that.
Yeah. His back leg is the drive that he gets like equal to the dirt of the mound. Like, his pant legs are getting dirty because his back leg is basically dragging on the ground as he's driving. And, he always talks about like hooking his spikes on the rubber. So like, you kind of put your foot flush on the rubber, like when you're out of the stretch, and he would like basically try to hook his spike to create that angle with his foot on the mound. And maybe we should try that. I don't know.
We should try it.
We should try it.
oh man, I'd get hurt. There's no doubt. Like every time Honeycutt would be like, hey, let's just try this one little thing. I'd be like, yeah, and I'd get hurt. I just can't. I'm stuck in my ways.
You are who you are.
Oh man, it's so true. All right, so how about the idea of like modern technology? Driveline, what's the one where they can like see your skeleton and how it works?
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't think of
it's like the video game thing.
It's not Editronics, the slow motion camera.
It's like the bio something.
Oh, man.
Biomechanical analysis.
Gosh, I got to think of that. Anyways, you know, let's say Sandy was born 50 years after he actually was. He's in the big leagues right now. Like, what do you think he could, our coaches, our staff, our analytical guys, like, what could they sit him down and tell him to make him even better than he actually was, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think it's just such a hard question because Sandy would probably be way better now, just like with all the stuff that we have access to. And I mean, obviously the hitters are better, I think, now too, a little bit. So it might be a wash, but I think they could get Sandy like super healthy. First of all, they'd help his arm problems. And I mean, that's what I've found with all the technologies. I think like you definitely have to listen because I think it might not make you like better as a pitcher, but it might make you healthier, might make you stronger. There might be some things where you can learn how to use your body more efficiently. And I'm not an expert in all that, but I think they could definitely tell Sandy ways to do that. And he'd probably be still going 50 years later.
50 years later. At 85, he looks like he could, man. He looks better than me. It's called, by the way, it's called Kinetrack. Kinetrack is the skeleton thing. I mean, it literally is your skeleton pitching. And they can lay it over, like, let's say I make a start in Colorado and the next start is at LA. They can lay those skeletons over each other and they can tell if they're the same. I remember one time Honey showed it to me and it was like slightly different and I got hurt. Like, this is just a podcast of me telling you how I get hurt. All right. So before we get into Sandy's early retirement, which you've alluded to a few times due to some arm injuries, I want to talk about really how famously great he was in the World Series. So 57 innings pitched. Less than a 1 ERA, a 0.95 ERA. What's crazy, Kirsch, is he refused to pitch Game 1 of the World Series in 1965 because of Yom Kippur. So Sandy Koufax was Jewish. Because of Yom Kippur, sat out Game 1 of the World Series, but he pitched Game 2 through a complete game shutout in Game 5 and 7, and more than made up for it. Is there anything that could keep you from pitching Game 1 of the World Series?
Sandy was unbelievable. No, I don't think so. I mean, yeah, obviously something terrible happens, but no, not off the top of my head. No.
Ellen's in labor.
No, we have three already. We're the fourth. I'll catch the fourth one on FaceTime or something.
I'll see you later.
Yeah. I'll do it in between innings.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Love you,
all right. Yeah. 57 innings pitched in the World Series. Pretty cool. All right. So Sandy retires at the end of the 1966 season, coming off a Cy Young season and finished second in the MVP that year. So retires literally in the heart of his prime, 30 years old, citing chronic arthritis in his pitching arm. So apparently at the time they thought chronic arthritis and pitching through it would actually lead to possibly losing the ability to use his left hand.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Sandy's told me stories about like waking up and after pitching and things like that. And just like the fluid buildup and the things that was in his arm and what he'd have to do to get ready to pitch the next day. And, you know, just 50 years ago, there just wasn't what we have now to get back and get ready. And I don't know exactly what it was that he had, but I mean,
was it shoulder or elbow?
Elbow.
It was elbow. Yeah. So almost certainly needed.
Probably needed.
Tommy John.
Right? Yeah. Tommy John or a scope or definitely something. But yeah. Isn't that crazy to think like
crazy?
It would take him, you know, a year and be back.
Yeah, and would have pitched. I mean, gosh, 30 years old, man, could have pitched another, who knows, 5, 8, 12 more years. I mean, there's no telling. You know, modern medicine, physical therapy, how many more years could he have pitched? You know, we'll never know. I do like the idea of Sandy riding off into the sunset and, like, the heart of his prime coming off of Cy Young. Like, I feel like that leads to, this kind of, mystique of Sandy Koufax, right, a little bit, where he kind of left the game. He doesn't necessarily come around a ton, and he doesn't. You don't hear much about him. It's just, I feel like it's perfect.
Exactly. Well, that's how he wants it too. Sandy would never, you know, private guy, like loves, you know, reserved and just loves kind of sitting back and hanging out.
Yeah. All right. So kind of crazy to think how far we've come medically in baseball in 50 years since that, right? Like what's baseball going to look like in another 50 years? Like, are they just
robots?
You're going to be able to just switch hands if you need to. I mean, it's just 50 more years. All right, so in 1971, Sandy was elected to the Hall of Fame at the age of 36. youngest ever to be elected to the Hall of Fame.
He was first ballot, obviously.
I just got elected in the Hall of Fame. Like, yeah, I had to be.
Right? I don't know. Yeah, probably.
Worth looking up, but I'm assuming so. I mean, youngest person ever to be elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. So the question we end every podcast with, Clayton, is how good would Sandy Koufax be today?
You know, this is like, I got on a little soapbox this offseason at one point when The Last Dance came out. You know, Michael Jordan, everybody's talking about Michael Jordan, best ever. And I agree. I think he is the best ever to play at the NBA. But like living in LA, like I'm a LeBron fan, tons of LeBron fans everywhere. Like, what good does it do to compare MJ to LeBron? And that's only like 10 years apart, if that, you know? So who's better? Who would you rather want on your team and like all this stuff? So all to say, I think Sandy would have been great. I mean, I think he would have been like, especially like nowadays, the way people pitch, like the way he pitched is how people are pitching now.
Yeah.
Like the launch angle, the guy swinging up to the ball to hit the ball in the air, like the high fastball plays, the curveball plays. So, I mean, I think he would have been great.
This is absolutely no shot at our good friend Rich Hill, but I think he's a better version of Rich Hill. I think he's got a similar curveball and he probably throws a little harder than Rich Hill. We don't know Sandy's spin rate. Spin efficiency.
They didn't have that then?
We assume our track man could have gotten Sandy right. And I just think that they're very comparable, right? The fastball, curveball usage, top of the zone, big curveball.
Yeah, I mean, when Richie's healthy, he's unhittable. So it's true. Yeah. Sandy'd be good.
When I heard the strike zone was from the knee to the shoulder, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to sit here and say, like, the strike zone was so big, anyone could have pitched then. But I just don't think that's true. I think Sandy was head and shoulders above anyone else. And now that I know him as an 85-year-old man and like how good of a person he is, how smart he is, and how in shape he is, there's no way he wasn't just a stallion among men back then as well. So
I agree.
Well, that's all we got for you guys today. I want to say a big thank you to Clayton Kershaw for coming on to talk about Sandy Koufax. A lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Two of the best lefties that have ever grace the mound at Dodger Stadium. So, Clayton, thanks a lot for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Strippies.